support from Family Life, bringing a Christian worldview to what's happening in New York, Pennsylvania, across the country, and around the world. Weather with Kevin Williams, plus special features and reports with the Family Life News team. Now, here's what's happening.
There's great public attention on what happened here.
Good afternoon. Thank you for joining us. I'm Mark Webster. Legal analyst Lori Levinson will get no argument there from Republicans or Democrats. But beyond that, there's likely to be little agreement over what to read into today's imminent release of a redacted affidavit from the FBI's raid on former President Donald Trump's Mar-a-Lago estate.
The DOJ says the affidavit contains information that could hamper or compromise its ongoing investigation into former President Trump's handling of classified documents. Today's release could share at least some details about what led the FBI to search Trump's estate on August 8th and remove boxes containing a number of documents, including some marked top secret.
CBS's Bradley Blackburn. Former Assistant U.S. Attorney David Weinstein says even some information coming out today is good for everybody.
The benefit of transparency is going to be to let everybody know exactly what took place and to prevent people from trying to guess what's going on here.
Former Trump advisor Jared Kushner explains why the former president and his allies have demanded the whole affidavit be made public.
This way people can know whether there's a serious allegation or this is more manufactured.
We'll have reaction to the affidavit released during today's 5 o'clock report. President Biden slamming former President Trump and his supporters last night.
Those of you who love this country, Democrats, independents, mainstream Republicans, we must be stronger, more determined, and more committed to saving America than the MAGA Republicans are destroying America.
Biden's comments coming in a fiery speech Thursday in Maryland, kicking off a Democratic midterm push just months before November's elections. Republican officials called some of his comments last night reprehensible. The Federal Reserve Chairman defending the central bank's response to soaring inflation. Jerome Powell says raising interest rates is painful, but warns about deeper pain if inflation isn't controlled.
While higher interest rates, slower growth, and softer labor market conditions will bring down inflation, they will also bring some pain to households and businesses. These are the unfortunate costs of reducing inflation.
Headlining the Fed's annual economic summit in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, Powell vowed to continue using the Fed's tools forcefully, adding, quote, "We will keep at it until we are confident the job is done." Europe now. The largest nuclear power plant once again supplying power to Ukraine. This comes after it was disconnected yesterday. Ukrainian President Zelensky noting a nuclear disaster was avoided thanks to the plant coming back onto the grid. Zelensky blames Russia for putting Ukraine and all of Europe in a situation one step away from a radiation disaster. In a revealing interview, CBS's Deborah Potta spoke with a Russian soldier who defected once he saw what was actually going on in Ukraine.
When the shelling began, we thought it was NATO approaching us, not Ukraine.
Paratrooper Pavel Filatiev says he served in Russia's 56th Air Assault Regiment, sent to capture Kherson early in the conflict.
It was only 10 days later when I realized there is no NATO here. It's only Ukrainians.
Do you feel tricked?
I know that we have been tricked for many years, and everything shown on state TV has nothing to do with reality. Unfortunately, now the same thing is happening in the war.
Now to Afghanistan. A Republican congressman says the families of troops who lost their lives there a year ago are still very angry.
The thing that just puts these Gold Star families over the edge is to see the commander-in-chief, to see Joe Biden standing before the nation and the world and saying this was an outstanding success. Nothing went wrong.
Michael Waltz of Florida says they're angry for multiple reasons, including there being zero accountability among military officers for what happened. He also issued a warning for the future, saying there will be more terrorist attacks because, in his words, terrorism is going to come roaring back. New COVID booster shots will likely be out just after Labor Day. FDA Director Dr. Peter Marks.
We are weighing the use of an updated version of the current vaccines that cover the currently circulating variants of coronavirus 2, the virus that causes COVID-19.
Meanwhile, it's Big Pharma versus Big Pharma as Moderna sues Pfizer over alleged copyright infringement in the development of their rival COVID vaccines.
The lawsuit sets up a legal showdown
showdown between rival vaccine makers that used novel medical foundational technology to speed up the delivery of coronavirus shots. The two companies developed highly effective shots in record time.
CBS's Jim Krasula. As marijuana legalization continues to ramp up, young adults are smoking more weed than ever before. A new study found daily use up 8%. Doctors say that's not a good trend.
It could impact decision-making, to motivation, to memory.
Brain expert Dr. Francesca Philby, the study sponsored by the National Institutes of Health, found that more than 40% of those surveyed had smoked weed in the past year. 11% get high on a daily basis. Dr. Philby says pot use can be particularly bad for adolescents during a critical time in their brain development. And T-Mobile is joining forces with SpaceX in the aim of eliminating dead zones nationwide. At an event Thursday, Musk revealed Starlink satellites launching next year will be able to broadcast service to T-Mobile phones anywhere with a clear view of the sky.
The Starlink second generation satellites will be able to broadcast direct to cell phones. So the cell phones you're holding up there, it will be able to transmit directly to your cell or mobile phone. The important thing about this is that it means there's no dead zones anywhere in the world for your cell phone.
This service would allow customers to make calls, texts, and use messaging apps even if there's no regular service available. Still to come on the Noon Report, a Buffalo Bills rookie accused in a 2021 college rape lawsuit, drug overdoses on the rise in the Southern Tier, and the latest on some key Pennsylvania election races.
Well, good afternoon. Though we're tracking some scattered showers and thunderstorms today, the weekend shapes up mostly dry and quite pleasant. Forecast details are coming up. We'll see you in 10 minutes.
All right. Thank you, Kevin Williams. Now checking the stories making news where you live in New York and Pennsylvania. Buffalo Bills rookie punter Matt Araiza has been named in a lawsuit filed Thursday in California, accusing him and other San Diego State football players of raping a 17-year-old girl last October. That victim now speaking out.
I don't understand how they could have done such a horrible and aggressive thing. It really just makes me sick.
Her lawyers say Araiza's attorney, Kerry Armstrong, reached out to him about a settlement. Armstrong tells WIVB his client's innocent.
There is no doubt in my mind that those allegations are false.
The victim says she's been having to deal with her attacker's actions ever since. Buffalo plays its final preseason game tonight in Carolina. Is Western New York's fall sports season in danger of not happening? A doubt comes from a lingering dispute between high schools and Section 6 sports officials over a new contract, which has referees considering a job action to force progress on a new deal by declining to officiate games until the section agrees to a new contract for officials. Such a job action would impact fall sports such as football and volleyball, winter sports such as basketball and hockey, and spring sports such as baseball. A Buffalo man behind bars after a traffic stop in Springville turned up several bags of a fentanyl heroin mix and more. 29-year-old Amir Walker has several outstanding warrants. Cops pulled him over after they found the fentanyl heroin mix, ecstasy, and five Suboxone strips, among other drug paraphernalia. In the Southern Tier, the Broome County Health Department is reporting an increase in overdose activity. Public Health Director Kristen Russell tells 12 News while it's difficult to track specific drugs that are causing the spikes, fentanyl is a common thread.
It's being laced with recreational drugs. It's being laced in opioids, prescription drugs that are counterfeit. We're seeing it being laced in a lot of different drugs, which is why we can't really pinpoint one substance or another.
Broome County has seen 7 overdose deaths in August alone, 43 non-fatal ODs, some of the highest numbers seen in months. A Syracuse mother has been arrested after her 11-month-old child died due to a fentanyl overdose. Back in May, investigators received a report about a baby who was in poor health in Syracuse, who was later pronounced dead at a hospital. After an autopsy determined the child passed away from fentanyl toxicity, 31-year-old Elizabeth Sove was taken into custody and charged with manslaughter. The New York State Attorney General's Office and State Department of Environmental Conservation have announced a court-ordered agreement which will shut down Battaglia Demolition Incorporated. That deal involves a lawsuit filed by the AG's office and DEC against the owner and operator of the company, Peter Battaglia Jr., for illegally operating the facility located in Buffalo's Seneca Babcock neighborhood without the required environmental permits. A community bike build taking place at Seneca One Tower. We get that story from Family Life. WTF's Dee Haley.
A community bike build was held at Seneca One Tower in Buffalo yesterday. 175 people with a variety of jobs at M&T Bank, Lighthouse Technology Services, and 43 North volunteered their time to assemble 50 brand new bicycles to be donated to the Eastside Bike Club, the International Institute of Buffalo, Buffalo Prep, and the Buffalo Police Athletic League. The event was held in honor of the late Robert Wilmers, who served as president of M&T Bank for 35 years and could often be seen riding a bicycle as his chosen form of transportation. Dee Haley, Family Life News.
All right, thank you, Dee. Now to Pennsylvania. Pennsylvanians reportedly have some of the highest student loan debt in the country. The Institute for College Access and Success says 64% of state college grads have student loan debt. Their figures show the average public debt load is a little over $39,000. As for private student loan debt, the average there, a little more than $42,000. Democrats in two key Pennsylvania races putting distance between themselves and their Republican pursuers. This according to a new poll. More now from Family Life's Brandon Dixon.
After a previous poll found Republicans gaining ground in PA's U.S. Senate and governor races, a new Franklin and Marshall College survey shows Democrats with a large lead again. The poll has John Fetterman up 13 points on Dr. Oz, with one in five voters still undecided in that U.S. Senate race, while Josh Shapiro leads Doug Mastriano by double digits in PA's gubernatorial contest with 19% uncertain. Brandon Dixon, Family Life News.
Continuing with politics, Republican candidate for governor Doug Mastriano says he wants to debate Democrat Josh Shapiro, but only under certain conditions. Mastriano says he'll agree to two 90-minute debates in October, but he wants them to be organized by both campaigns instead of by media moderators, which is the tradition in Pennsylvania. A spokesman for Shapiro's campaign rejects that idea, saying it's an obvious stunt by Mastriano so that he can dictate his own rules for the debates. The Athens football program in Bradford County is working with Pennsylvania State Police to investigate reports of bullying, hazing, and improper behavior that have caused physical and emotional harm to several student athletes. Athens Area School District Superintendent Craig Stage said in a letter posted to the school's Facebook page Wednesday that the incidents occurred over a series of dates leading back to a mid-July football camp at Bloomsburg University and up to preseason practices taking place in their school facilities. That means that three PA teams, now Middleton and Mohawk, the other two, currently facing police investigations into hazing incidents. There are now two U.S. teams left at the Little League World Series in Williamsport.
A grand slam by Josiah Porter and the stellar pitching of Drew Tranwick propelled Tennessee to the U.S. title game of the 75th Little League World Series. The heroics of Porter and Chadwick led the boys from Nolansville to a 7-1 win over Texas.
Reporter Tom Speicher in South Williamsport. The U.S. title game slated for Saturday at 3:30 p.m. Before that, in the international bracket, it's down to Chinese Taipei versus Curacao on Saturday at 12:30. The winners of those two matchups will determine who will play Sunday for the overall championship at 3 p.m. on ESPN. Pennsylvania officials have submitted plans for a third time now on how they're going to try to clean up the Chesapeake Bay. Two earlier plans were widely panned for failing to achieve pollution reduction goals and for lack of funding to implement them. A proposal has now been submitted that promises all of the state's needed cleanup actions will be in place by 2025 with help from ARPA funds. The proposal would reduce nutrient and sediment pollution from 33,000 farms in its portion of the Chesapeake watershed. Opponents say the PA farms are the biggest contributors of nutrient pollution in Chesapeake Bay. And finally, a new museum in Pittsburgh will be out of this world. Family Life's Brian Query with the story.
A little over a year after its creators announced plans to open Pennsylvania's first space museum, the Moonshot Museum now has an official opening date and is scheduled to open its doors to the public on October 15th. Pittsburgh-based science robotics company Astrobotic is behind the museum, which it is calling the first in the world to focus on career readiness for the contemporary space industry. The Moonshot Museum will place a heavy emphasis on interactive experiences, including sending visitors on simulated lunar missions. A glass wall will allow visitors to see actual lunar landers being built and readied to fly to the moon. The goal is to inspire young people to become interested in space careers as part of their studies. Brian Query, Family Life News.
All right, and that brings us to a check of sports.
Good afternoon. I'm Randy Snavely. Mark, the Yankees appear to have righted the ship as they won their fourth in a row, blowing out the A's 13-4. Josh Donaldson and Giancarlo Stanton both drove in three runs in the victory. Elsewhere, Toronto won in 10 over Boston 6-5. The Orioles went to 11 innings before coming away with a dramatic 4-3 win over the White Sox. Dramatic because in that game, Chicago learned just how costly an error can be. With a 3-2 lead and two outs in the bottom of the ninth, a dropped foul ball gave Kyle Stowers another swing, and he hit it out of the park. It was his first home run of the season, and more importantly, tied the game and sent it into the extra inning affair. Houston doubled up Minnesota 6-3, Seattle down Cleveland 3-1, Tampa Bay beat the Angels 8-3. Over in the National League, Aaron Nola struck out 11 and shut out Cincinnati 4-0. Kyle Schwarber hit his 35th home run, and that home run puts him two ahead of Paul Goldschmidt of the St. Louis Cardinals. Goldie hit two home runs yesterday and drove in five in the Cards' 8-3 win over the Cubs. Goldschmidt has a real shot at being the first National Leaguer to win the Triple Crown in 83 years. He leads in batting, RBIs, and is second to Schwarber in home runs. Jacob DeGrom went six innings, struck out nine, and he silenced Colorado's bats 3-1. Pete Alonso, a home run and drove in two, putting him just one RBI behind Goldschmidt. And in preseason football, Kansas City down Green Bay 17-10. Houston shut out the 49ers 17-0. That is a look at sports.
Still to come on the Noon Report, we'll recap the day's top stories, and then we'll take a virtual ride through the Lockport Locks.
Max's hearts have made it all the way to war-torn Ukraine. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street with Breakpoint. Frequent readers and listeners of Breakpoint know about Max. He was the grandson of Chuck Colson and the subject of a book called Dancing with Max, which was authored by Emily Colson. That's Chuck Colson's daughter and a Colson Center board member. Max is a remarkable young man who has autism. The last few years have been quite difficult for Emily and Max, especially since the COVID lockdowns disrupted their routines and canceled their helpers. And yet, in the middle of the challenges and disruptions of the last few years, God has given Max a ministry. Here's how Emily Colson described this remarkable story in a recent email. Quote, it was during the COVID shutdown of 2020 when Max began to hand paint colorful heart yard signs and then deliver them around our community. Max wasn't an artist. Autism had made fine motor a lifelong challenge, but God often uses the most unlikely individuals to accomplish his purposes so that the story is unmistakably his. Our dining room, she continues, became a workspace with plastic wrap stretched across the table and paint dripping into places that won't be found for another decade. It was there in the ache and loss and isolation of the shutdown that Max would paint his joy-filled hearts. Max has given away more than 250 heart yard signs now, and he's still painting. The hearts have made it onto note cards, 36,000 in circulation so far, with all the proceeds going to charity. His hearts grace the front of shirts, each one packaged with a message of God's love and the value of every life. And a heart exhibit is traveling to different gallery locations, telling the story of what only God can do, of how he can multiply blessings. As incredible as that story has been, there's now another chapter to it, which began when Emily's friend April sent her a message. Again, here's Emily. She'd been watching the war break out in Ukraine on live television, so she prayed and God pressed an idea into her heart like a hot wax seal. Send Max's heart to Ukraine. Well, Max and Emily's church leapt at the idea. Their printer, Spectrum Designs, a company employing the most amazing team of individuals with autism, jumped just as quickly, printing the first 1,000 shirts. A team of highly caffeinated volunteers began folding and packaging each shirt with a message of God's love and hope, all translated into Ukrainian. But where would we send these? Who should receive and distribute these shirts in Ukraine? Well, that answer had begun 50 years ago in the brokenness of Watergate. My dad, Emily says, Chuck Colson, served as special counsel to President Nixon and, as many know, went to prison. When Emily's dad was released from prison, he founded Prison Fellowship Ministries, which became the largest prison ministry in the world, reaching millions of people in the darkest places around the globe with the hope and love of Jesus Christ, even Ukraine. James Ackerman, president of Prison Fellowship USA, traveled to Romania and then, with a team of ministry leaders and volunteers, carried the shirts and other supplies deep into Ukraine, delivering them to children of prisoners and to people in a Ukrainian refugee center. After, Emily received a photo of one little boy who was holding Max's picture and wearing a shirt printed with Max's heart and the words, "Beloved by God." Both of his parents had been killed in the war. As Emily said, quote, "When I saw this little boy's face, I cried for days. God cares. He aches for the brokenness of this world. He is close to this little boy, just as he is close to Max. God was even leaning over Max's shoulder as he began to paint, knowing that he'd carry these hearts and his hope around the world." If you want to join Max and Emily in their mission to spread these hearts around the world, visit www.heartbymax.com. That's heartbymax.com. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street with Breakpoint.
Here's our call for this afternoon. Vera Fadinas. Some breaks of sunshine, a couple of showers, and locally heavy thunderstorms in the area into the evening hours. The high temperatures today in the lower 80s. Generally, later tonight, leftover clouds and patchy fog. Low temperatures dropping towards 60 tomorrow. Morning clouds and fog becoming partly to mostly sunny and pleasant. So there's a slight chance of a brief shower from central New York and eastern Pennsylvania. High temps tomorrow, 70s to near 80. And then Sunday starts cool, ends warm and sunny. The high temperatures on Sunday into the 80s.
All right, thank you, Kevin. This is the Noon Report on Family Life. I'm Mark Webster. Thank you again for joining us. Recapping a couple of the top stories this day, a redacted affidavit related to the FBI's search of former President Trump's Florida home due out this hour. This legal analyst says making more info public is prudent.
I think what the public is going to learn is, again, just how much effort went into this affidavit, the fact that there are pages and pages and pages of probable cause, potentially the types of documents above and beyond what we already know were seized.
A federal judge ordering the Justice Department to release it despite concerns that releasing too much of the document could expose the identities of witnesses and law enforcement agents. The Federal Reserve Chairman defending the central bank's response to soaring inflation, Jerome Powell acknowledging raising interest rates is painful but warns about deeper pain if inflation isn't controlled.
Restoring price stability will likely require maintaining a restrictive policy stance for some time. The historical record cautions strongly against prematurely loosening policy.
Powell speaking at the Fed's annual economic summit in Wyoming. And Moderna suing Pfizer and BioNTech over alleged patent infringement. Specifically, the lawsuit involves the two companies making their COVID vaccine by using Moderna's technology. Pfizer and its German partner accused of copying it after Moderna filed patents for mRNA technology between 2010 and 2016. All right, now let's take a little staycation, shall we, with Family Life's Tracy Lynn.
I'm Tracy Lynn, and this is our summer-long staycation destination series. Every Friday during the Noon Report, we'll spotlight a staycation destination that's not far from home and won't break the bank. This week, we're taking you on an Erie Canal cruise in Lockport, New York.
Hello, my name is Mike Rona. I'm with Lockport Locks and Erie Canal Cruises.
So we're about 20 miles east of Niagara Falls, New York, along the Erie Canal. What is so special about Lockport, New York?
Lockport is one of the great canal cities of the Erie Canal. It is noted for the incredible engineering feat that took place to get the canal installed. There is an elevation of about 70 feet that the canal had to overcome to get to the ridge where water could flow in from the Niagara River. And then between it and the Niagara River was an additional 45-foot limestone mound that had to be excavated to allow the canal to go through. It became a major transportation hub for all of Western New York when the canal was completed.
And when was that?
It started in 1817, was completed in 1825. And it's interesting that most of the canal was completed up to Lockport from Albany, and they had to wait almost 2.5 years for the Lockport Deep Cut, the limestone escarpment, to be excavated.
For listeners who may not know, what is a lock exactly?
A lock is like a gravity escalator. In this case, the boat flows into what is essentially a rectangular bathtub. The bathtub fills with water by gravity up to the next set of locks. The doors open and the boat passes through. And again, by gravity, with the flow of water, it is moved up till it reaches the elevation of the lock.
Yeah, and how many locks are there in Lockport?
Two modern locks in Lockport. Originally, there were 10, so the locks that are replaced were 90 feet long. These are 300 feet long and contain 3.5 million gallons of water.
Can you tell me about the town? Obviously, it probably wasn't called Lockport before the locks were installed. And how has it built up because of the locks?
Well, before the canal was constructed, there was nothing here. There was a small village of Buffalo about 20 miles southwest of us that had maybe 1,300 people in 1810, but it's essentially wilderness. Its name was called the Niagara Frontier because it was the frontier of the United States. The towns that popped up on the canal because of the canal.
Yeah. Was coal one of the primary things that were shipped along the route?
No, coal was found south of us in Pennsylvania, in the Pittsburgh area, along the Appalachian Mountains, up to the Wilkes-Barre Scranton area. Here it was salt, sandstone, granite, timber, agricultural goods were all shipped to the East Coast. And manufactured products came from the East Coast to the inland.
So people can come here and take an Erie Canal cruise. What does that include?
Well, the cruise is about an hour and 45 minutes to 2 hours long. In the cruise, you will go through Lock 34 and 35. Then when you get up to the upper level of the lock, you will pass inside what is called the Lockport Deep Cut. The Deep Cut was a 45-foot-high mound of limestone that was excavated to install the canal. You'll see the marks where the engineers, actually, they were called engineers, but we had no engineers in the United States. They were learning to be engineers. Where they broke up the rocks either using War of 1812, the leftover gunpowder, or just simple hammers, chisels, and sledgehammers. The canal towpath, as you come out of that area, we will return. You're heading west at this point. We will then turn around and come back down through the locks again, and we'll pass through what is called the historic Market Street District. Those are the homes that were some of the first homes built in Lockport, with early construction starting in the 1830s. Most of the homes were constructed out of the limestone that was excavated out of the canal. They were called freestone buildings, and that's what helped cause the city to boom. You had plenty of building materials that were free. Also, you'll see what is called a levee. There is a 60-mile-long, probably 30-foot-wide rock and dirt berm, which holds the Erie Canal up against the Niagara Escarpment. The city of Lockport at that point dips below the canal. So it'd be like going to New Orleans and the Mississippi River, to where if you're standing in downtown New Orleans, you see the ships going by up above you. It's the same way here. The people in lower Lockport will see the boats traveling by above their heads. It's fully narrated. All our captains have been with the business for more than 10 years. They're knowledgeable. They're open to questions.
So, Mike, how much should folks expect to pay when booking a boat tour with Lockport Locks?
For adults, that's age 11 and up, it's $21.50. Youth from age 4 to 10 is $11. Children under 4 are free. And if you're a member of the Automobile Association or the Canadian Automobile Association, the adult charge is $20.
Okay.
We would recommend to make sure you don't make a trip to us and then find out we're sold out is that you purchase your ticket ahead of time. You go online and you can make a purchase ahead of time.
Great. And what's that website?
That's lockportlocks.com.
It's spelled just the way it sounds.
Yes.
Is there anything else you'd like to tell us maybe about the town itself?
Yes. We have a fantastic Episcopal church that has Tiffany stained glass windows in it. We have a very informative discovery center, which will tell you the history of Lockport. You can walk down to see the old 19th century canal locks, which are in the process of being restored. There is a rebuild of an 1840s canal boat down there that you can see. There is a tour which will take you to the underground caves to see the old raceways of the canal. It is an interesting little town. It's about 18,000 people, and it's a very scenic.
We hope you've enjoyed coming along on our staycation destination. You can hear all the podcasts online. Join us next week as we visit a new destination in Pennsylvania.
All right, you can listen to our noon report features online anytime at familylife.org. Just ahead.
Hokey religions and ancient weapons are no match for a good blaster at your side, kid.
Well, good afternoon to all. Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast. Keep an eye on the sky this afternoon into the evening hours. There'll be a couple more showers and thunderstorms dotting the area. As a cold front passes through the region, though, higher pressure builds in for what looks like a very nice weekend. Here's our call for this afternoon. Very cloudiness, some breaks of sunshine, a couple of showers, and locally heavy thunderstorms in the area into the evening hours. The high temperatures today in the lower 80s generally. Later tonight, leftover clouds and patchy fog. Low temperatures dropping towards 60. Tomorrow, morning clouds and fog becoming partly to mostly sunny and pleasant. Though there's a slight chance of a brief shower from central New York and eastern Pennsylvania. High temps tomorrow, 70s to near 80. And then Sunday starts cool, ends warm and sunny. The high temperatures on Sunday into the 80s.
All right, thank you very much, Kevin. And finally at noon.
In my dead body.
Ankle. Yeah, Oscar.
Yes, I bet you have.
Sorry about the mess.
Well, Han Solo may have been sorry about making a mess of Greedo in the Mos Eisley Cantina back in the original 1977 Star Wars movie A New Hope, but an Illinois auction house sure isn't sorry to be selling the prop blaster that Harrison Ford used in that iconic scene. They've got high hopes indeed.
We have that estimated $350,000 to $500,000.
Joel Colander of Rock Island Auction says some experts believe that even that $500,000 estimate might be conservative. Now, true Star Wars geeks know that Han's sidearm is officially called the DL-44 heavy blaster pistol, but maybe not everyone knows the prop is actually a heavily modified real-life gun, a Mauser C-96 broom handle pistol, to be exact. This prop gun went missing after the first Star Wars movie was filmed, but later somehow resurfaced and now comes with a letter of authenticity and a signed photo of Ford. The auction's set for Saturday, and the seller has every reason to imagine a big payoff.
The reward would be
what?
Well, more well than you can imagine.
I don't know. I can imagine quite a bit.
And that's the universe we live in for Friday, August 26, 2022. Thank you very much for listening. Have a blessed weekend. I'm Mark Webster, Family Life News.
You've been listening to The Noon Report, heard weekdays on Family Life. Thank you for listening.